guys.
Really scraping the bit barrel today.
So it's okay. I haven't got a job, so I've got all the time in the world to edit this episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back, if you're returning, to Out of Print, a culture podcast with a literary twist, hosted by myself, Emmeline.
Me, Alice.
And myself, Sophie.
And I'm pushing through this week because I quite literally swallowed a fly on my way here.
Em? How?
I don't know how. It's not really a thing that you can explain how it happens. It just happens.
You should keep your mouth closed.
Yeah, were you mad? Actually, I think what was happening is I was walking down the street and I was like singing along to a song. And
you were singing along to a song?
Well, no, just
that's
like
crazy. Yeah,
not audibly, like just mouthing the words.
Okay, you just look crazy.
Now I'm embarrassed of myself.
You brought up the fact that you were eating flies on the way here.
I didn't. So. There was no. I didn't eat it on purpose.
I'd hope not.
Yeah. We're descending. Anyway, it's your week this week, Alice.
It is my week.
Get me off the mic.
I'll get you off the mic. We're all feeling, again, pretty tired.
There's a bit of a theme emerging.
I think it's because we switched from, we used to record Friday afternoons at the beginning of the season, and now we're closing the season and we've been recording on Monday evenings.
So we'll have to move back to a Thursday or a Friday vibe for season two.
Yeah, definitely. A more fun vibe. Because, I mean, the subject that we've got to tackle this week is quite a fun one. And maybe in a way Monday's a good day for it, or Sunday would be the best day for it, because we're thinking a lot about hangovers. Mm-hmm. And what I've got written down as the one-line description for the episode is the anti-blaze on tradition, fried chicken, cake mascara, and Diora light. Post-party abjection.
Love.
Post-party abjection.
That's the summary, the collection of things that we'll be looking at. And we're going to be doing this through a poem called A Beautiful Young Nymph Going to Bed by Jonathan Swift. Mm-hmm. And obviously I can launch straight into the analysis. Shall I just do that? Does anyone want to say anything?
The only nice anecdote that I have about this is that I remember we studied Jonathan Swift like really early on into our uni days.
Yeah.
And that was how we met as three freshers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So flux skeptical.
No, it's just I remember writing an essay on satire in Jonathan Swift when I was about 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And the professor was like, this is awful.
Oh no.
So don't expect any kind of sage contributions from me about Swift. I'm sure I'll pipe up with some incorrect facts.
Well, there was probably a fair bit of that. But yeah, it's definitely situated in my brain in that time when we were all sort of starting to go out as freshers and learning what it was to sort of be clean and be messy at the same time. So I think it's an apt pairing of theme you've picked.
100%.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. And he was actually one of my favourite poets that we looked at in second year. Basically, I wrote a whole essay on beauty and disgust. Mm. And I was very interested in depictions of the female body. And I'm going to launch him with some key words because I don't want to confuse people. So just to make sure that we all know what everything means. Are you guys familiar with the term blazon?
Blazon, yes.
Vaguely. If you can go over it, that would be helpful.
Well, if you know what it is, would you like to define
it? Yeah, it's a trope within a particular type of poetry that lists, that lists qualities or tropes or attributes or usually physical characteristics of a person, and then that makes up their being. So if I was describing Alice in the blazon tradition, it might be grey blue eyes, pink purple cardigan,
big juicy boobs.
You said it.
Well, it's normally very hyperbolic as well, as opposed to sort of
massive juicy boobs.
Yeah, and it's used to sort of, I guess, pedestalize women, and it's sort of it's a mode of veneration. And you know, we talk now about,
I actually don't know what that word means.
Veneration, when you, it's like when you highly value something or someone. Okay, so what I'm interested in broadly here is the blazon, like trope or like that type of poetry as a means of creating a beauty standard, like an inflated beauty standard that obviously, you know, we also have today with the likes of Kim Kardashian and just like every celebrity under the sun getting the same surgery and they all look the same and it's all very like symmetrical and beautiful versus what Jonathan Swift was doing, which was essentially satirizing this type of poetry in an anti-blazon, which was sort of like cataloguing physical attributes, but doing so in quite a mean way. So the poem that we've got, which is A Beautiful Young Nymph Going to Bed, I'll read out a couple of lines to give you guys the idea. I mean, for context, he was writing in the 18th century. So yeah, this shit's old.
I'll put my 18th century hat on.
Yes, please do. Please, everyone, put their 18th century hats on.
It's donned.
So basically, he's setting the scene. Coroner, she's the pride of Drury Lane. So she's out in central London. For whom no shepherd sighs in vain. She's hot. Never did Covent Garden boast so bright a battered strolling toast. She's drunk.
She's drunk in Soho.
She's getting a little bit messy.
Out with the girlies.
She's out with the girlies. She's click-clack, down the cobblestone high street. And there's probably poo everywhere. Because it's the 18th century, it's happening in London.
It's happening.
Listen, we're here to talk about abjection, so poo is actually very relevant.
It's never going
to
be that long.
That was not a gratuitous poo mention. Okay, so she's out, she's been out, she's gotten battered, and then she's strolling home. And basically the majority of the poem focuses on her getting ready for bed. I kind of in my head like to parallel this with the sort of get unready with me clean girl videos that I see less of them now, but definitely a few years ago it was like,
oh yeah,
they'd come home and have, you know, some lemon water, 12-step skincare routine.
I think it's still happening, but I think we've probably all consciously cleansed our algorithms of it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That's true.
I'm not seeing claw clips in my feed nearly as much as I used to.
So true.
No.
So true.
And I don't think that's because they're out of fashion. But this is, so kind of have that in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And by contrast, we have Coroner. And I'm going to read it. This is a little bit of a longer bit. So lock in, but it does rhyme, so.
Thank God. It's not poetry if it doesn't rhyme.
Exactly.
And I've always said that.
I've always said that.
No comment.
So she gets in, she's getting unready, or getting herself ready for bed. So then, seated on a three-legged chair, takes off her artificial hair. So she's wearing a wig.
Mm-hmm.
Now, picking out a crystal eye, she wipes it clean and lays it by. She's taking her eye out. And then her eyebrows from a mouse's hide, stuck on with art on either side, pulls off with care and first displays them, then in a playbook smoothly lays them.
Dead mice on her face.
So she's got eyebrow. Her eyebrows are mice.
Dead mouse
dead
skin hide.
I'm just like... processing it. Yeah. That's a controversial choice.
I mean, this is 18th century cosmetics, essentially.
That's something that actually people did.
I think so, yeah. Wow. I think all of these, it's like how women used to use, what was it, the white powder. Was it lead on their face?
And
to
also,
make them pale?
There's all sorts of kind of cosmetic and quite like toxic chemical tradition of putting things on your face that were not good for you.
And now we have retinol, which I use every day. And I'm not sure it is that good for... Well, now it's microplastics is what we're rubbing into our skin.
Yeah.
Okay, I've just looked it up and it says it's widely believed that some women in the 18th century Europe, particularly during the Georgian era, used mouse skin and fur to create false eyebrows, often shaving off their natural ones to do so.
Oh my God, that's like veneers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Real. Because they wanted high, thin and dark arched brows.
Wow.
Where are they getting the mice from?
Well, like, I guess they were. I guess they were all over the place, weren't they?
The fucking
can't be good for you.
The like Google AI summary. It actually does mention the Swift poem in it, but obviously, like you know how they bullet point it out. It says humorous consequences. It was reported that these glued-on brows could fall off, leading to embarrassing situations for society ladies.
That reminds me, once at Christmas when I was too young to like compute what was happening. My Auntie Joan, her teeth fell out into her wine glass because she laughed so hard. But I was the only one in the room that saw it. And as a 9-year-old, I was traumatized because I didn't know people could have fake teeth.
Oh!
So I ran to my dad and I was like, I think something's really wrong with Auntie Joan.
Oh, thank God her mouse eyebrows stayed on.
So funny.
That would have been really scary.
That would have been really scary. And actually, that would have been really scary.
Extremely topical, because then she does go on to remove her false teeth.
There you go.
So it's like, yeah, we're kind of working our way in the same way as a traditional...
Head, shoulders, knees and toes.
Yeah, it tends to work. No, it does. It tends to work its way down the body. So you're kind of doing things in kind of like, not chronological order, but I guess like structural.
So ending on the feet. Was Swift often. Was he a bit of a footman?
No, I think it often stops at the boobs.
Oh,
because women don't exist past.
It's not very far down.
No, I know, but oh well. Actually, now that I think about it, it's probably because it's like a
bust, right?
Yeah,
it's like a portrait. It's an ekphrastic technique in a way. It's like they are creating. They're mirroring a portrait. But yeah, so she takes off her mouse eyebrows. Her mouse brows, and then now dexterously her plumpers drawers that serve to fill her hollow jaws, untwists a wire, and from her gums a set of teeth completely comes.
Wow. It's very visceral.
It's very visceral. I think that's kind of one of the things that's where the abject... Sorry, I keep using the word abjection, and I don't think I've defined it.
Define it, girl.
Do you guys have any idea before I launch into it?
Isn't abjection like the extreme physical sort of reactivity and sort of movement of something away from you, either in disgust or in like, yeah?
It's basically that. There's a lot of different kinds of definitions, like specific definitions around it. But the one that I'm most interested in for this context, where we're looking at the female body and viscerality and bodily fluids, is Julia Kristeva's definition, which she wrote a lot about in, I think, it's Powers of Horror.
Oh, that is one of the best essays of all time, actually.
Yeah.
She's a legend. You'd really like it.
Powers of Horror.
This is just like a very quick side note, but it's a really interesting one for if you're interested in like feminist readings of horror films, because she talks about how all of the horror comes from birthing sequences. So like birthing the kind of scary creatures rather than things being like destroyed and consumed.
Yeah.
And she does like a kind of this really interesting reading about how it's like really feminine horror. I don't know. It's fascinating.
It's like things that are a part of you also being disgusting and monstrous, and the kind of the idea that something can be an extension of yourself. And I think that particularly applies to the feminine body, where you know we shed our uterine lining every month, and we have just stuff coming out, and then obviously pregnancy and all of the kind of quite hairy stuff that comes with that. But I've got a couple of quotes on how Julia Kristeva talks about the abject, and I think the best kind of summary, because she's talking a lot about shit.
I knew it was going to come.
Sorry, Emily.
It's okay.
She talks a lot about like poo and vomit and secretions, things that come out of your body that are at once part of you, because they are organic and they are made inside you, but they are also disgusting and, you know, in poo and sick and puss and blood, all of those things, they are all reminders that we are sort of biological, corporal forms, and that we are dying. And like that's where the abject feeling comes from. It's this like defecation, decay, don't wanna look at it. So she says, crucially, it is thus not lack of cleanliness or health that causes abjection, but what disturbs identity, system, order.
Mm.
What does not respect borders, positions, and rules. It's the in-between, the ambiguous, the composite. So the main kind of example of the abject that she cites is like a corpse, which obviously we're not kind of going into that, but it's like the like kind of reminder that you're going to die. And like it's...
So Swift is kind of playing with the idea of abjection by taking a really traditional form and kind of cracking it down the middle for a discovery and an unveiling of what was not necessarily actually going on at that time. But also there was a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, but anxiety in that period of time about disease, sexually transmitted disease,
venereal disease in general. Yeah.
And I think that was a period of time when people were a different kind of health conscious, and particularly to do with people sleeping with prostitutes or with women that were sleeping with multiple men. There was sort of, I mean, some of it sort of factual related to disease, but also some of it falsified, and I guess kind of troublesome associations between women that were sexually liberated and disease, and that's probably part of what's going on here.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It's fear around the female body, which is a recurring theme in just literature in general, but definitely in horror, as you were mentioning, the female monster
being brought all the way up to the substance. I guess that's the most contemporary example.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
I think the link between the monstrous and the seductive, with relation to like the female form, is always quite an interesting one, because the substance is a great example of like, oh my gosh, this lady looks so sexy and yet she's secretly rotting, which is the same as in here in the Swift poem. But also if you look at stuff like The Tragedy, which came out in like the 1500s, that's all about this guy's wife, Gloriana, dies, and they paint her skull up to look like a woman, to like trick someone. And there's a lot of stuff to do with kissing mouths that are painted with poison, and like the feminine throughout literature since like the beginning of time right up until now is always linked to like death and decay and seduction and artifice. Exactly.
And like that film, is it called Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson, where she drives around in a truck at night and seduces men, picks them up, and then sort of takes them back to her lair, as it were. And I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen it, but it's a similar kind of, seduce and destroy narrative. It's really interesting and very dark.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely one side of what Jonathan Swift is doing, like he was saying, sort of disrupting the form, cracking it down the middle, and, you know, presenting a woman as ugly, where she would typically have been described in a very complimentary and flattering way. And then the last few lines, which are our favorites, I believe. She's taken her wig off, her crystal eyes out, her mouse brows are out, and her teeth are out. So she's just like, kind of hollow at this point, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Quite bare, if you really visualize her face. And then she pulls out the rags contrived to prop her flabby dugs, and down they drop.
God.
Proceeding on, the lovely goddess unlaces next her steel-ribbed bodice. So, also interesting half-rhyme, goddess and bodice. Because it's like, she's not a goddess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the flabby dugs is how he describes her.
This is the old school way of men complaining about women wearing Spanx and the Victoria's Secret, like, bombshell bra.
Yeah.
Do you remember there was... This was like vintage Love Island, maybe actually when we were at uni, and I think we were watching it to get through our exams. And there was one guy that sat down with the girl he was with and said something along the lines of, and I think he's since apologized for it, but it struck me at the time. There's this inherent sense of disappointment that he gets when a woman who was previously all glammed up in her makeup takes her makeup off to go to bed and sort of gets in bed with him.
It's really gross.
Yeah, really gross.
Well, it's like the whole men will comment on a woman's picture and she's in full glam, and it's like, take her for to the pool next time, take her for a swim.
Oh yeah, that's no, it's really common. Yeah. Or yeah. or one swipe of a makeup wipe and it's all gone.
Yeah,
or
it should be a four.
The opposite yeah. of that, which is in Angus Long's Imperfect Snogging, when he does take her to the pool and she does a handstand and she's incorrectly fake tanned her legs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Georgia, your legs look like cheese puffs.
Great film.
I've got a song about you. It's called Bits in a Uniform.
That movie's amazing.
It's like an all-time
great
classic.
Film. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's describing exactly that sort of process of, I guess, undoing, unmaking.
Yeah.
And even just, yeah, even the word make, we're all, I'm just looking at all of our faces now, we're all obviously wearing makeup because yeah. there's a fucking camera there.
Yeah. We should have come in, we should have done an episode, a performance art piece where, you know, gradually we took our makeup off throughout yeah. the whole of the episode.
I don't think I'd be brave. I think it's, I don't think I'd be brave enough to do that.
I know. Makeup, really?
Yeah.
It's so silly because we're in here to discuss literature and culture. And we're so aware of the fact that it's going on social media that I'm like, fuck, well, I guess I wear more makeup than I ever normally wear.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's also, it's a healthy conversation to have and that we can, like, at least acknowledge that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why it's so frustrating when people talk about the kind of undoing and, oh, it's all fake and blah, 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 because it's like, well, you know, we're upholding standards that someone else set for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shakespeare, you know, with his fucking sonnets back in
bastard.
The day, you know, praising women for their impossible ethereal beauty that, you know, we can no longer reach those statures. But that's kind of the section on artifice and, I guess, yeah, presenting the female body in a different light. And like you said, Sophie, it was very visceral. And I think now I want to move more into the morning after the night before. So nice. That's the night before. She's gotten herself unready. Mm-hmm. She had her flabby dugs flapping around.
God.
And then we cut to the next morning. And again, I think this also reminds me of the Clean Girl videos where they talk about getting through a hangover by just like drinking some lukewarm water with some apple cider vinegar and then going on a 10k run. I'm like, that could never be me. Never be me.
Mm-hmm. It'd be good to get around and see everyone's hangover cures. I'd be interested yeah. to know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we can reflect on that as our parting thoughts, maybe.
Yeah.
So this is the morning after. So she wakes, Corinna wakes, a dreadful sight. Behold the ruins of the night. So she looks terrible. She looks really bad.
Oh,
and I'm sure we've all been there.
Who's ever woken up from a night out and thought, you know what? Yeah.
You have to still be blackout drunk yeah. to yeah. have that yeah. thought. And you haven't taken your makeup
also,
off.
Well, sometimes yeah. there's a bit of an indie sleaze aesthetic.
That's true.
When
the
you
hair,
wake up.
The tussled hair.
If you've
yeah.
had glitter on, it can
oh,
sometimes
like
look quite
I
cool.
I like that.
Yeah.
Like
very
that.
Euphoria
very
2019.
Euphoric. Yeah. And with the, I think if you've still got some mascara on, you know, it can.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's an indie sleaze.
And a big band shirt.
Yeah. There's
okay,
a bit of an aesthetic there.
Yeah.
But ultimately you do stink. So like, probably.
Yeah.
Like you've not brushed your teeth. Anyway, I'm skipping ahead to us, but we need to re-enter the 18th century. So he goes on to write, "The nymph, though in this mangled plight, must every morn her limbs unite. But how shall I describe her arts to recollect or recollect the scattered parts?" What I like here is the dual meaning of recollect or recollect, because not only is she obviously having to gather up her bra, her glass eye, her mouse eyebrows, her wig, etc. It's also like, like what happened last night?
Yeah,
I have the perfect anecdote for this scenario, which is in... I think it was after university, I'd gone back to visit my ex-boyfriend who was still there. And I think I'd just gone through a phase of I hadn't drunk for a while and I'd been quite like focused on work or whatever. And for whatever reason, I got there and I accidentally had a massive one. Like I was really, really drunk. And we went to the uni club, and there is something about that atmosphere and the nostalgia of the intensity.
Brings out the worst of us.
Just sends you west anyway. The next morning, with not much memory of how I got home, I just remember waking up, dear listener, I apologise in advance, a pint glass full of my own vomit.
Oh,
yeah, the
and that was the worst, waking up where I was like, I have a lot of things to collect and sort out, and I'm not sure why or what, but that's the visual image mm-hmm. I'm afraid yeah, to leave mm-hmm. you with.
Yeah, the sick in the pint glass is
I know.
It's quite yeah, visceral.
It's really not fun.
And I think it's that moment when you want to... I've had it a lot of times where I've woken up in strangers' houses and there's been hats everywhere or like guitars everywhere or some... That's just one particular man, actually, who I won't name.
Although he did famously send you your belt back after you left it there, but did it in the creepiest way possible by packaging it up. He made his own envelope out of duct tape, sent Alice her belt back in the duct tape envelope, and the only other thing in the package was a white Kit Kat chunky.
A white Kit Kat chunky.
It's so specific. They're not even that easy to find.
It's yeah. also, you're really making quite a strong assumption about someone if you think that that's what they're gonna, if that's yeah. their chocolate bar of choice.
But you know what? Yeah. He's right.
You are a white Kit Kat gal.
I do like a white Kit Kat chunky.
But you were certainly recollecting your scattered parts after that night.
That night.
Really funny.
Yeah. And obviously left my Bella at his place, so I didn't even successfully recollect everything.
Yeah.
And gather it all up. And obviously these days, you know, with social media and texting, you can just... There was a time, sorry, I sound like a boomer then, didn't I?
with all the texting going on today.
There was one time when myself and Emmeline had been out together, and it was one of those nights we'd gone to some big club in central London,
yeah.
a rogue night, and you called me, you FaceTimed me, and you were like, Alice Garnett.
Oh no, I don't even know what you're going to say.
Oh, what? And you were like, you did the funniest thing last night. And I literally had zero recollection of doing this. Can you guess what I'm talking about? I can't remember
what we're talking about.
You told me that as we were leaving the very fancy, very expensive restaurant we'd been eating and drinking free champagne at.
No, I do remember that.
Yeah. If I jogged your memory.
Wait, I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. Basically, someone that was like living near us took us out for dinner very kindly, and everything was kind of on the house, and we were like kids at a sweet shop being like, oh my God, free stuff. So I think we just drank a bit more than our worth. But Alice, hilariously, kind of had this weird frissance with the waiter, this weird like energy all night. And I don't think you remember this, but towards the end of the evening, he came up to Alice and whispered in her ear, I heard it, I'll be your waiter for this evening.
Weird.
Yeah, and I was like,
Alice was okay. into it. And then as we left, he held the door open. It was just me and Alice. Alice walked through first, snogged him as he held the door open.
Oh my God.
Leaving the restaurant, just like kissed the waiter for opening the door. And then I stood behind them, walked through. I was like, don't even think that's what I'm going to do. They set some weird precedent for leaving a restaurant. You snog the man that holds the door open.
So yeah, she's having to recollect the scattered parts, and obviously we've all sort of been there. What happened last night? I think waking up in Vegas, Katy Perry, that song.
Great song.
I want everyone to listen to that immediately after listening to this, just to kind of, I don't know, reminisce about those crazy wild times we hope you've had. And the poem ends with, so that I actually hadn't clocked this before, but the end couplet is, Corinna in the morning designed, who sees will spew, who smells be poisoned. So he's saying that she's so ugly, people will throw up. And she's so stinky that they will be poisoned by even being within 3 feet of her.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
The poor woman.
He goes in pretty hard.
Can you imagine like being like, you know, I've written a poem about you and that's what you get.
But it's the hyperbole. So, you know, in the same way as, you know, in traditional in the traditional sense, in when poets are using blazon, it would be hyperbolic but positive. He's just gone the other direction.
It's literally
direction.
I wrote a song about you. It's called Bitch in Uniform.
Yeah. Genuinely.
It's literally that.
Genuinely.
Yeah, and in a way it kind of, it does actually seem quite juvenile, because it is a bit like kind of making fun of this woman. And I guess what I am interested in, you know, your guys' take on. So for me, I loved reading this poem, and I loved analysing it, and I loved exploring this idea of how femininity can also be disgusting and repugnant, and how, you know, we can take women off the pedestal. Mm. But obviously this is, you know, maybe going a bit far. But I found it quite empowering, because, like, I am a woman who, you know, is kind of gross. And I'm happy to admit it. I'm happy to admit that I'm a bit gross.
Literally once when I was sat next to you at a lecture in first year, a chip fell out of your hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry to dogpile on you, but I guess... But when I lived with Alice a few years ago, you came home from a night out with a mutual pal of ours, and you smelt so strongly of French cheese that our fellow flatmate refused to go into your room. He was like, it's fucked in there. Stinks.
Yeah.
And you are such a beautiful, beautiful young nymph yourself. I'm so stinky.
So stinky.
So stinky.
Yeah, and I think I relish my...
You're right.
My right to be gross.
Totally. Yeah.
And for me, that a feminist... Saying that's a feminist thing is quite like a bold statement, but I do feel like it's an intrinsic
That's what Christine Gerard says, who actually we had the pleasure of being taught by.
Shout out.
She absolutely loved Swift, and she took the same reading as yourself, Alice, where she said, along with David Farrer, "Laterally, the dressing room poems have been read as a satiric subversion of the blazoning of the female muse and claimed by feminists for their presentation of a liberating challenge to male-constructed poetic fictions of female beauty." But then it's also kind of like, I mean, does it matter what his intention is? Was he just an absolute arsehole? Or, you know, was he genuinely enjoying playing around with the idea of, well, women are people too? So, but I think your idea of the right to be gross is really interesting.
I think intention does matter to a certain extent, but also it's difficult within that context, because I guess what would have been really refreshing on both sides is to have a female voice providing either that counter narrative or sort of, I don't know, that their own take on the main blazing tradition. So that you kind of naturally feel like you lack that voice and that critical argument as a reader. I think there's always a desire that we're seeing half of a full picture. But it's sort of refreshing within that tradition to read something that is so, kind of boldly critical to a certain degree of a certain trope. I think there are limitations with, like, how much we can claim that his intention was to, you know, like, be super anti-clean girl.
Be an ally.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to take everything that Swift says with a huge pinch of salt.
Pinch of salt.
He absolutely tore strips off everyone. He tore them off the poor, he tore them off the rich. He famously kind of defected in between the Whigs and Tory party, so it wasn't even like his politics were consistent. I think he just enjoyed being a bit of a bastard.
Yeah, and he's a satirist, isn't he? I feel like his role is a kind of like a jester, a comedian. It's the point fun of existing systems and to kind of send them up.
Yeah, Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
And he wrote that really kind of harrowing poem about, oh, well, we should just let the poor, you know, eat their own babies, you know, rather than trying to provide for them. You touched on something interesting there, Em, with the clean girl, anti-clean girl. So is this a manifesto? Is this a manual against the current age?
I think I would potentially present it as such, but obviously with a lot more nuance and a lot less, just being mean about women's bodies, which is obviously what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I think it is a sort of, you know, I'm a big believer in, I think just personally is one of my values is have fun, be messy, so long as you're not hurting yourself
or other people
in the process. But I think we've become so, as a generation, we want to box ourselves in. We want to romanticize the everyday, and obviously there is a lot of value in that because, you know, the world's pretty scary right now. But also, we don't need to be going to Reformer Pilates every Saturday, girls. We can be going to the club, and we can be making friends, and we can be drinking too much vodka, and we can be being sick on our shoes. But, like, you know, you're making memories with your besties, whereas you can't make memories with your best friends, and you can't foster that community from your bedroom.
Or, as a TikTok I saw the other day states, he's like, oh, you guys, well, you guys are out, like, going to the club, doing whatever, drinking, being messed up. I was in the gym, bettering myself, and then going out to the club, drinking, getting messed up. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
I think it's, not to make it serious, but interesting how much the kind of clean girl aesthetic is linked to, like, the rise of the conservative influencer. So, for example, like your Nyra Smiths who are pushing like the Mormon
trad
lifestyle.
Trad wife adjacent.
Mm. Trad wife, very clean, very minimal, stripped back, healthy, skinny, often like white, very Eurocentric ideas of beauty. And I think, you know, when we kind of had like the brat summer, goblin core, dirty girl aesthetic, a lot of the people who were kind of like the faces of those movement were very traditionally beautiful women. There's a TikToker who's called What Zara Loves, and she says that pretty privilege to be gross. Essentially, it's you can break the norm of femininity by being a bit messy or disruptive because you make up for it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So while it's feminist and it's within women's right to be gross, I do think we need to be conscious of the fact that there is an element of the more attractive you are, the more acceptable it is for you to play around with your grossness.
Totally. Really true. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I think if you're not, you know, uber slim or white or, as you say, fitting into that Eurocentric idea of beauty, then your grossness will be put down to a sense of immorality or laziness rather than like, oh, she's so quirky.
And even the grossness that, I don't know whether it's fair to say that that's a performative grossness or not, but even that influencer grossness is a very limited form of grossness. It's not the throwing up in a pint glass kind of vibe.
It's the glitter down the face.
It's lower lash mascara. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, linked to women with substantial wealth. So, for example, the two that come to mind are Madeleine Argy and Emma Chamberlain. Mm. These are ladies with a lot of money who have an empire. Mm. Yeah, they can scooch around in a hoodie, like it's fine, because the hoodie costs like 300 quid. Mm. So I hate to, I know I'm being like Debbie Downer on this.
No, it's good.
But I think it's, bearing in mind that there's always privilege with any rights to expression, and that includes, you know, the right to be gross. Mm. And also just thinking about how the fact that aesthetics generally tend to be a sign of the times. Mm. It's like clean girl aesthetics is a conservative swing to the right 100%. Indicator, which is why TLDR, it's very left wing to let people be gross and have fun.
regardless of where they sit in society as well. Because, it has to be all women's right to be gross, not just Charlie XCX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's real.
Amen to that.
Emmeline, do you have a closing statement?
Do you want anything specific in your closing statement?
You could say, what your hangover cure is. Let's circle back to that one.
My hangover cure is a very large glass of some kind of electrolyte water or stuff like that. Watch me like fall exactly into the trend of the people you were saying. No, it's getting better. I like a large glass of electrolyte water. I like the wind in my face, a bit of air.
Yeah, real.
I need to get outside. I need my three liquids kind of gal. So I probably want, my electrolyte water, a cup of tea, and then maybe like an orange juice. Yep. And then I want a slap up meal, you know, something hot and carby, something satiating. And then I want to probably go for a walk and come back home and lie horizontally with my pals and watch TV. That's the dream. Nice. Hangover cure. That strong. Would sort me out any day of the week.
Sophie, do you want to share your hangover cure, or do you feel like you're TLDR?
I can't end on such like a down serious note. I'll share my hangover cure. Entire tube of salt and vinegar Pringles. Yes.
In bed?
Mm. In bed. Yeah. Large bottle of ice cold Capella apple juice with ice in it. Then sit down, shower, shit my pants usually.
You sit down in the shower?
Not to shit my pants.
But you sit down when you're in the shower?
Yeah.
When you're hungover. That's revolutionary.
When I'm really hungover, I'll sit down in the shower.
Whoa.
And then I must eat beans. And then, yeah, horizontal TikTok time.
You must eat beans.
I must eat beans.
Otherwise, what happens?
Otherwise, sad.
Sad. Hungover, Sophie. Alice, what about you?
My ideal hangover day.
Why are you both laughing?
Not shower for 3 days.
Because I live
with
you.
Throw my pubes out the window.
I live with you, and I feel like I've lived through it. God, too many times to, I know exactly what you're hungover.
I know exactly what you look like when you're hungover.
It's like puffy.
Your eyes get really small. I can't describe it.
It's because my face gets so inflamed from all the cheese that I've eaten the night before. Definitely a Lucozade.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Normally, I honestly, will just my partner will go to the shops.
I was going to say collected,
not by me. Yeah.
Or by me or Emily.
Yeah, it's so true.
We both live with the
I don't leave the house. These days I do shower.
Good. Growth.
Yeah, growth. Thank you. And so again, some kind of carbs.
Mm-hmm. You love a potato smile.
Oh, potato smile.
Yeah. Or a potato waffle.
Or a potato waffle. Something
or a hash
like
brown,
that.
Anything potato.
But yeah, basically.
McCain sponsors Alice's hangover.
You can't see, but Alice is sort of trying to shake Emmeline's arm. She's going, yes, yes, yes.
I love those things.
It's like, you know when dogs hear dogs, their favourite words and
potato
they're like
waffle.
Wagging its tail. Yeah.
Potato smile. Hash brown. yeah, all of those things. And then generally we'll just like binge watch television, or you know, I've gotten more fond of, you know, going for a little walk, having a coffee at there's a place near us on the canal which is really nice, but generally it is like a rotting day. Like I'm not very functional with a hangover.
You lean into the rot. Maybe that's the TLDR.
Lean into the rot. But not
mouse hide, not dead mice on your face.
Yeah.
Preferably. I mean, who am I to judge?
Yeah.
But to me, that seems like a line.
But do let your flabby dogs loose.
Another great t-shirt idea. Guys, if you're interested in merch, let us know.
Not wearing a t-shirt that says, let your flabby dogs loose.
You would, right?
Just flabby dogs.
Yeah.
Just the words.
Flabby dogs. Just flabby
let
dogs.
Let us know if you want some... Some hot merch.
And I'm going to close this episode, which has been, I think good. I think we've done well, considering we're tired.
I think we pushed through. I think we can give ourselves a pat on the back.
Yeah.
Particularly Sophie, who is sleep deprived.
I've had 4 hours.
I can see there's not much behind the eyes, but we're almost there.
Yeah, you've done very, very well.
Well, I mentioned beans, and I haven't stopped thinking about having beans for dinner. And got realised that was kind of checking out the conversation.
You're going to have a cheesy dino when you get home. And I'm going to say RIP Jonathan Swift. You would have loved Brat Summer and Morley's Chicken Burgers and McCain's Hash Browns.
Real.
We've got to sort that sponsorship out.
We've got to sort that sponsorship out. Thank you both for staying with me.
Thanks, Alice. That was a great episode.
And thank you to Mia from the Roundhouse for setting everything
She's
up.
Smiling.
She's smiling. She can see. And to Transmission Academy for making this possible.
Well, this is also the penultimate episode before our season finale.
Our live season finale. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah. So, fingers crossed. Wish us luck, everyone.
Woo!
And thank you for sticking with us for a season.
If you're still listening, wow, that was a little kiss on the forehead to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Alice.